Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Are you ready? This feels weird.
I know.
You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I am Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita, and we are joined by our friend Peter Sagal.
One last time. Let's teach him how to say goodbye.
From the hit musical Hamilton.
Oh,
exactly.
Which you should check out, kids, if you haven't yet.
Okay, so today we are rehashing Season 8, Episode 6, which is maybe not so creatively titled The Iron Throne.
Yes.
And is the last episode of all the episodes ever.
Yeah.
No more episodes. They're all done. If you wanted more, you're out of luck because there are no more episodes.
Yeah. So can we start with another amazing voicemail montage that our producer Justin Bull created because he's brilliant?
Hello, my name is Lacey in Montana, and I actually know Greta from Fairbanks Media. We spent some time at the wall together, you could say.
G'day there. It's Rob here in Sydney, Australia. Longtime listener, first time caller.
Oh, it's recording. Hi, Nerdette. It's Lauren. I'm calling from Atlanta.
Hi.
Hi, it's Gary here.
Barbara.
What's up, Nerdette Nation? This is Pam from Nebraska.
I'm whispering because I don't want my husband to hear me. It's not that, you know, he's bad or anything like that, but it'll be a ton of questions, and I just don't want to deal with them. But anyway.
Just finished the finale, and the only word I have to describe it is whelmed. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm not underwhelmed. I'm just whelmed.
I just have to ask, why is John? That's it. Just, why is John?
The lack of internal logic or even real-world logic within this episode just blew me away.
And they lived happily ever after, WTF.
What's the point of Bran?
Just like that, huh? Just like that. Bran? No, give John the shaft, give it to Bran. You know who won? Tyrion. Tyrion won.
So, when I started the show tonight, I was fully expecting to hate it. Like, with the fire of 10,000 suns, because the last two episodes were such giant, steaming turds.
I loved the finale. I'm probably the only person on the planet who did, but I like a good ending. And it was.
I was actually pretty satisfied with the ending.
But I was so glad that he shot the fire at the Iron Throne instead of Jon Snow.
And without overthinking it too much, I enjoyed the hell out of this episode. Jon's fate was a little weird, but as Greta and I know, the wall isn't such a bad place.
This was the most non-offensive ending ever.
Could have been worse. Surprised it wasn't. It was okay.
I'm fine. I'm fine with most of it, but come on.
It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. It was fine.
I guess it made sense on some levels. The North is pretty parochial. But on other levels, the North not wanting to play ball with the new regime, it kind of looked like more like Sansa was like, no, I still want to be queen. I'm going to be queen. Let me be queen.
I guess I liked it.
I want to just say real quickly from all of us fans of Nerdette Recaps, don't go! Don't go! Please don't go!
So, that's what we're feeling. Thanks, y'all. We love your show.
Thanks for your podcast. I really enjoy you guys.
Oh, Nerdettes and Peter.
Oh. Bye.
Bye.
So, Justin Ball, you put that together since last night?
We got about 50 voicemails. That I waded through them, sent him a pile, and he made that.
That is amazing.
Isn't it great?
It is amazing.
I would like to give Justin an Emmy for that.
And they also give out Emmys for podcast sound montage?
Yeah, turns out Trisha has Emmy-giving power.
Yeah. Who knew?
And also, I would just like to point out that that was about 40% more dialogue than was in last night's episode.
True. I also want to point out the woman who said she really enjoyed ending sounded like she just had one.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so before we get started, I would like to propose that as best we can, we stick to discussing just this episode.
Right.
Because we actually have one more recap episode scheduled. And that is going to come out next Tuesday. And that, I feel like, is when we can really talk about not only season 8 as a whole and how we feel about, like, the big stuff, but also, you know, the entire frickin' series and what could be next and, like, the spinoffs and, like, if there will ever be books and all that good stuff.
Right.
So as much as we can,
okay,
Let's stick to the Iron Throne.
The Iron Throne. Do you think we need an emotional check-in? Because that's what that montage was.
Wasn't it?
How are you guys? How are you feeling today?
I'm really sad.
Okay. Are you? Yeah, you seemed pretty disappointed in your text to me last night that just said, ugh, in all caps.
And then sigh.
Yeah.
Ugh, sigh. Why did you ugh, sigh?
I think in the light of day this morning, I am still sad. And not because I was disappointed by this episode, but because I don't like it when things end.
Oh.
And I'm having sort of like a very existential crisis a little bit about the fact that I just realized it's not that I didn't like the ending. I don't like endings.
Yeah.
So. Oh, that kind of breaks my heart, Trisha.
Because I want to just keep hanging out with these characters and keep hanging out with nerds on the internet talking about them and all of that. So now we have to find a new thing. But I like Greta's plan of not thinking too hard about the fact that it's the end of everything.
Yeah, let's just discuss this
episode. So I'll compartmentalize
Let's not think
about
sorrow.
Let's save the tears for Tuesday.
Let's not think about anything too hard.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Let's just sit here and smile wanly.
I feel like that
makes
is very
good radio
fitting for the finale.
Sit quietly.
Just sit quietly. I have a happy thing to cheer you up. According to all available evidence, which is all we'll ever get, Cyril Farrell is still alive.
What?
I've decided. They didn't indicate one way or another.
It's true. That's true.
It's Schrodinger's first sort of bravos.
Yes.
He's both alive and dead, and I have decided he is alive.
That makes me very happy.
So there.
I thought it was actually summed up the best from what Tyrion said when he was talking to Jon towards the end. When he was talking about the compromise, and he was like, well, everybody's a little bit upset, so it seems like a good compromise.
Yes.
Like, that's how I felt about this episode.
Yeah.
It was like, it wasn't outstanding. I mean, obviously, we heard from that voicemail. People are disturbed by certain elements.
Nobody's like,
but
oh,
overall,
my God, they totally nailed it. I haven't heard that.
It was a beautiful bow.
Yes.
And they did their best.
Right.
I wasn't mad about it.
It was the kind
of
bow,
though,
that you tie it around your finger and then you take your finger out and it's still kind of loose because you couldn't quite get it right. But it's like you got to bring it to the party, so it's going to. But here's this has to be said that we long ago, certainly sometime in the middle of the season, stopped talking about the show. We are now talking about the show, people's reaction to the show. We're talking constantly about Benioff and Weiss as if we know these people.
Right.
We're talking, it's like this intense conversation about our own lives and our own expectations. Like Trisha just said, well, how do you feel? I mean, this is long, long, long ago went beyond merely critiquing a TV show.
Absolutely. Well, and did you guys hear about the petition? It was people asking that HBO remake, I think, season 8 with, quote, competent writers.
I have found that sort of, I guess, half, I don't know, significant fraction of Game of Thrones
entitled
nerddom.
Fandom,
so annoying.
Yeah.
I just want to yell at them, regardless of my opinions about whether they're right or not.
agree with most of their...
Maybe, but I'm just so loathe to give those entitled jerks an inch.
Yeah, there is a level of entitlement.
But it fits the place in our culture that so many other things do in terms of irrational fandom. Like, you think about people's relationships to their favorite sports teams or their favorite musicians or whatever. Like, that's part of what we do, is we sort of get obsessed about something that's outside the realm of our natural sort of like day-to-day life so that we then think less about.
When I was a young man, people didn't express their irrational fandom by doing petitions. They just wrote weird pornography about characters and put it on the internet. Come on, guys.
Well, I mean, there is, I mean, I do think, now I feel weird using the phrase fan servicing after you've discussed pornography, but here we are. You know, I mean, we have talked about the most recent seasons of Game of Thrones do seem much more interested in what people think in terms of, you know, hamming it up a little and having fun with things, you know, I mean.
But I've liked the campiness of it because I think that that works in the world of the show often when they do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying I think that can strengthen someone's argument that, like, this fandom has had a say to a certain extent.
Right. That there's,
you know,
you can't. We've talked about this many times before. You can't help but sense that they know what we're saying out there. Like, to take an example, a minor example, there's that joke toward the very end of the episode where Davos corrects Bronn's grammar.
The Master of Coin looks forward to helping the Master of Ships, but first he has to ensure we're not wasting coin, or soon there won't be no more coin.
Anymore.
You're master of grammar now, too.
Grandmaster.
Right. And so what that's about is, like, we know you loved back when Stannis used to say fewer. And Davos picked it up from him. So here you are, everybody.
Yeah.
Throwing us bones.
It might have been my favorite bone in the episode.
What do you think about being thrown bones? Do you enjoy it? And I mean that, of course, in the metaphorical sense.
I thought that one was fun. I thought everyone laughing Sam out of the, I guess it wasn't really a room because they were outside.
Yeah. Do you want to like back up?
Should we start from the beginning?
Yeah, otherwise, we're just never going to get this done.
Okay. Okay.
So, but then it won't be over. And as I've said, I'm fine with there not
well,
being
we
ending.
Can just keep meandering through the carnage
sure,
of King's
fine.
Landing, apparently. If that's what yeah. y'all
slowly
want
and quietly for a long time, because yeah. that's how the episode starts.
So yeah, my note says, sad Tyrion among the ashes.
Yeah. yeah.
That's how we started.
Feeling bad.
It also, I mean, there were a lot of those early scenes where I was just sort of like, do we have time for this?
That I was,
you
like,
know?
Chop, chop.
Chop, chop.
Let's go.
Well, apparently, I actually stopped on my rewatch because I watched it twice and checked the climax of the episode, which takes, well everybody has seen it.
Yeah.
When
I
John
know,
kills
like,
Danny,
we,
it's not like a spoiler.
That? Yeah.
Happens 39 minutes
yeah.
in, which is a little less than half the length of the episode.
Right.
So it's, despite, you know, his long walk through the ruins, They got to that pretty quick.
Yeah.
yeah. The beginning felt slow, and then that felt fast. And then I went, all right, what now?
And then there were a number of false endings, and then it really ended.
Yeah. And they did that, I think, two or three times.
Yeah.
They went to black and
yeah.
held as if, hey, it's over.
Oh, is this it? Oh, no.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I got laughed at last night watching with my friends because every time that happened after about halfway through the episode, I went, is that it?
Yeah. I kept
indignantly and loudly. Yeah. And then they went, no.
No,
I was like,
no,
okay,
it's only
there's more.
Chill. Anyway.
Trisha. So we have Tyrion seeking out his sibs.
Yeah.
I did have a moment where I was like, if Cersei pops out of this fucking rubble, so help me God.
Just like the classic, you know, hand coming up. I'm still here. Why did she
They were killed by only one brick each because
exactly.
they were only beneath
yes,
one
yes,
single brick.
It was
brick.
A shallow burial.
Very easy to find.
Well, clearly that was so Tyrion / Peter Dinklage could have that moment of mourning his sister. Because you think about it, how else would it work? Oh, my liege, my lord, whatever. Oh, Tyrion, the prisoner, whatever it might happen. We just found your brother and sister and they're dead.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have been as powerful to have Tyrion looking, digging out and looking at their sad little yet seemingly intact bodies.
Well, and as much as the conclusion of the story ended up being about the Starks, this episode really was Tyrion's.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, so much of it was from his point of view, was him arguing why things needed to be a
right.
certain way, why people needed to do certain things.
And in a weird way.
He had a lot of monologues.
They knew, again, we constantly think about, I mean, we're almost like weird, like, you know, doctors of the church trying to figure out what God actually wants through the textual evidence. We're all like Thomas More. So it's like we're trying to figure out what they, the gods of Game of Thrones, Benioff and Weiss wanted to do. And it seems one of the things they wanted to do was to give certain characters, including most importantly Tyrion, a happy and satisfying ending.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrion ends up finally being the wise person who figures out the solution that works for everybody, and he arrives at a position of power and happiness. And so we're all like, yay, Tyrion. Maybe. But that clearly was the intent.
Yeah. So let's see from there. Arya is no longer on the horse.
No.
We did get some frustrated voicemails about that. What was the point of the horse?
I didn't miss it. The horse was,
you know,
sort of an image.
It was like, okay, whatever. That's fine. Daenerys, that scene was so visually striking.
Oh,
to
yeah,
me,
with the wings. I almost said, please, but it's a pretty sure. Is that like a visual echo of, I think, a scene from, of all things, Sleeping Beauty?
Oh,
isn't
sure.
Isn't there like a
maleficent
thing?
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden these bat wings emerge.
Maleficent AF.
Yes, very much so. And not only that, it was also another visual reference, Triumph of the Will. As she stood on this great steps, like Hitler addressing the troops,
cheering
her.
That war-mongering rally was pretty terrifying.
And that real big flag.
Yes,
yeah.
The huge flag. And then, like, flanked by the flag and the dragon.
Oh, yeah.
Flag and dragon.
The flag and the dragon. The dragon, the flag.
Did y'all notice I'm pretty sure Valyrian for Dorne is Dornut? Did y'all pick up on that?
Was that a closed caption?
I did have a lot of sparkling rosé. So I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Dornut.
Ten winter velva Dornut.
I had a crazy thought, but I completely forgot it. But anyway. No, also, the black armor she was wearing, has she had another costume change?
Yes,
because
she was
wearing her sort of northerly white robes the last time we saw her on top of the dragon. And now she's sort of changed into this cool, almost Sansa-like black armor, or actually Cersei-like, really.
Yeah, yeah.
When and where do these characters stop and do costume changes?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but there she was. Everybody's been talking about the turn in last episode when Daenerys goes either insane, depending on your point of view, or fulfills the destiny that she was walking down all along.
Or she at least fails to recognize the bells.
Right. So she came out and it was – remember, we talked about the fact that you did not see her face after that initial decision. Mm-hmm. So you don't know how she was feeling. Mm-hmm. And we find out not only is she feeling pretty good about what
she
did.
She's got a little smug mug.
But she's like, let's do that again. Yeah.
Again, forever. Forever, forever.
I mean, what she's basically threatening, and I think one of the reasons why they had place names in that speech from Winterfell to Dorne. From Dornut. Here to there, Dornut, from Winterfell to Dornut. No long, yes, it's now.
From Wet Dorne to Dorne.
Exactly. No, Wet Dorne is, exactly, thank you. That she's threatening people and places we know. Nobody ever makes it explicit, but you know, based on just that speech, that, for example, if Sansa did not bend the knee as Lady of Winterfell.
Yeah, the houses are going down.
The Winterfell would have been crisped to the same extent that Winterfell was, which, of course, makes Jon's decision coming up a little easier to make. Although I was surprised. I guess somebody said, you really think your sisters are going to go for this? But nobody said, do you want Winterfell to be reduced to smoking ash just like this city was? Because it's pretty clear that's what she's going to do. But it was remarkable to me how hard they went on I don't know. What's the German scholars, what's the feminine version of Führer? You know, that's where they went with it. And I was like, okay, that's the commitment. I was maybe thinking that Dany would at least stop and pause to think about it, but I guess
or have even like a twinge of a what twinge. Have I done?
Yeah, but when you think about it, as Tyrion points out, and that's something I really want to talk about, that's not her style. She's never in the entire series ever stopped and said, oh, I really shouldn't have crucified
Well,
those
let's hang on. Hang on. She chained her dragons underground for months, if not years, because they burned one child too many. Like we saw, you know, the bones of one child get brought to her in Meereen. And then another. And then she chains up her dragons because she was so ruined by the idea that her dragons were hurting children.
Hmm.
And that was just a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
That's a good point.
Okay. So from there, we get Jon talking to Arya, which you just kind of hinted at.
Right.
She's everyone's queen now.
Try telling Sansa.
Wait for me outside the city gates. I'll come find you.
Jon. She knows who you are. Who you really are. You'll always be a threat to her. And I know a killer when I see one.
Credit to Glenn Weldon, who in his NPR recap said, very astute, Arya. Yes. No one else knows Dany's a killer.
Yes, exactly. What was interesting to me was that the button on that exchange was not, she's going to kill everyone you love. She's going to burn Winterfell to the ground or whatever, although, again, it's implied. But she's going to kill you, which for our hero, Jon, maybe shouldn't be his primary concern at this point. That's not his style to act out of self-interest and self-preservation.
But if he thinks that he's the only thing standing between Dany and his sisters, Dany and everyone else, if he thinks he can reason with her, which is what he's going to try to do later.
Right, Dany and what's right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So let's listen to now we have the next scene where Tyrion is in jail.
Again,
yeah.
Love a good Tyrion stuck
Jamie.
In a dungeon and or a what are the wheelhouses and or a box.
He's often stuck in small spaces.
Talking
this
people
was a fairly
into
nice
doing...
one. It had furniture, even though he still
that's
sat on
true.
The floor.
Because
that's what you do.
When imprisoned.
You sit on the floor.
When she murdered the slavers of Astapor, I'm sure no one but the slavers complained. After all, they were evil men. When she crucified hundreds of Meereenese nobles, who could argue they were evil men? The Dothraki Carls she burned alive, they would have done worse to her. Everywhere she goes, evil men die, and we cheer her for it. And she grows more powerful and more sure that she is good and right. She believes her destiny is to build a better world. For everyone, if you believed that, if you truly believed it, wouldn't you kill whoever stood between you and paradise?
So intense.
I scribbled in my notebook, they saw it coming. And this is what I mean. So this episode presumably was written 2 years ago, right? And it was produced and shot and edited, say, they finished it 6 months ago. I have no idea how the schedules are, but a while ago. And that conversation that – or rather that speech that Tyrion just had was absolutely an echo, a replica of the debate that's been going on between us, between thousands of recappers and bloggers and tweeters, making those very – I made the same argument last week. Look what she did. And you guys said, well, she deserved it. I mean, it's almost – no, it's not almost as if. It's Benioff and Weiss, the writers, entirely anticipated the objections that people were going to have to last episode, and they laid them out. And here's Tyrion saying, well, I'm not going to say he agrees with me, but I certainly saw this line of argument saying, Tyrion saying, look, this is who she has always been. And when she's done it before, we all said, well, that's great because they were evil men. And then was there a line in there that she tends to find evil men wherever she goes?
Wherever she goes, evil men die and we cheer her for it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was a very sort of – I'm not self-aware, not in the sense of Tyrion being self-aware of himself – but aware of how we have reacted to her as a character.
Well, and the tagline of the show being all men must die.
Right. Wait a minute. What does that have to do with anything?
That she is the one who is killing all those men.
Yes, that's true.
And then when she runs out of evil men to sort of, you know, take out of power, then nobody – it's like the conversation they had earlier too where they were like, what is your legacy going to be? What's the succession plan after you take power? And you realize like, oh, no one has thought about that at all.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit. Nobody has a plan beyond winning the war.
Yes.
And, you know, except for Sansa.
So did y'all notice there's a moment when Jon and Tyrion are talking just after this clip. They start talking about love and how love overpowers reason. And Tyrion says, we both loved her or something like I
you
loved her too, not as successfully
as you.
That was a you got to bone the queen joke.
That
pretty
was
much.
That, right?
Remember we talked about this, the shot, I guess, at the end of season 7 of Tyrion outside the door of their stateroom where they were making the family with two backs. And Tyrion had a look in his face. And some of us were like, was he jealous? Maybe he was a little.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird thing to throw in there.
Well, it's also true that, let's face it, that a lot of people who followed Dany around professing their loyalty to her because she was a great queen had a pretty serious crush on this very attractive young woman.
Yeah. So Tyrion talks Jon into doing the deed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, straight from there to Jon meeting her.
It's the next
near
scene.
The throne.
It's the next scene. And so a lot of questions. When do you think Jon decides to do it? Do you think that he walks into the throne room thinking to himself, well, maybe I can reason with her. Maybe she will express some regret. I mean, it's possible to think that if she said, I don't know what came over me, I just thought about Missandei getting her head cut off, which is, by the way, something that Jon offers
referenced to
Tyrion, right? To Sybil, she just saw her best
dragons
friend.
Dragons got shot out of the sky.
If it wasn't for all of that, I don't know. I just snapped. I'm so sorry. Jon probably wouldn't have gone through with it, right? But the fact that she was like, yep, did it. And yes, I did order my troops to kill the prisoners because that has to be done. And we're going to keep doing it. Right, Jon? We're going to do it together. And that's when he's like, yeah, Tyrion was right.
Yeah. It's a moment where they could have had sort of a Jaime Cersei like, we are the only ones who matter. We know what's right. We are the ones. And Dany was right there. But Jon was like, nah, no, that's not – I don't want that responsibility. I don't want that power. I did think that the amount of dragon we got in this episode, both the ash-covered napping dragon.
That was pretty cool.
was kind of
dragon.
Fun.
Yeah.
So was it ash or snow at that point?
Yeah, it's
because, I mean,
was
it was
so
also
ambivalent.
Snowing, right?
It was snowing. There was way too much stuff on the ground for it to be ash.
Yeah.
But clearly it was ash and snow.
Yeah.
And a number of people – I went online and said, oh, this was the meaning of that vision she had in season 2 where she's sitting and we thought it was snowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it was the ash of the city that she was going to burn someday. And somebody wrote back and said, no, it's snow, indicating that Jon Snow will take the throne.
That.
And I said, that's silly. But Jon Snow is the person who kills her at that moment.
Yeah.
In the vision, of course, somebody pointed this out. She walks up to the throne but doesn't touch it. And I think it was Steve Johnson at Chicago Tribune who points out that in the episode last night, when she does touch the throne, when she puts her hand on one of the sword hilts, it's exactly the same spot that she was going to touch it in the vision but didn't finish. She also sat there in the vision with her dead husband, Khal Drogo, who came back, little Jason Momoa cameo in season 2. And maybe that is indicating that in the vision she was there with a man she loved who was dead. I don't know.
I kind of thought the throne was going to zap her.
A zap?
Yeah.
A little zap.
Like a booby trap?
Yeah, it is interesting.
One last Cersei booby trap.
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah. There was this legend that I don't never know ever come up on the show, but that the legend was that if you were an unworthy ruler, the swords and the chair
exactly.
Would
it's
cut
like
you.
The sword and the stone.
Yeah,
you
it would
know?
Cut you. And I wondered if it went that way. When John did the deed, when he stabbed her, what was your reaction? My reaction was already. Because I honestly, I saw that coming, especially with all the lead up. I just thought they'd take longer in the episode to get to it.
I wrote, holy shit, this is exciting.
Oh, so you were like into it.
Well, we got to keep this.
Got to keep this moving.
Yeah, we got
to
keep going.
Since it was by design so inevitable, it's best that they got to it sooner rather than namby-pamby around.
Well, and the fact that it was John who did it.
Yeah.
I kind of liked. I mean, you know, I think he's just always been so oriented toward what is right. And this was the right thing to do.
Right. It was.
Even though he was conflicted about it later.
Was it hard for him to do? And this is where I'm going to get into my one major criticism.
I don't know. I mean, my whole thing, I never believed that they actually loved each other.
That's the problem. That's exactly it. Because so much of it is built on the notion that John, by doing this, is making a huge sacrifice, killing the woman he loves.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Right. And we've talked about that even though it was clearly designed to make it seem as if they were deeply in love, none of us bought it. And by none of us, I mean the entire viewership. For whatever reason, they just never made that work. I never bought that he actually loved her. I never bought that she actually loved him.
Yeah.
Despite all the writing and acting and scening and making out and dragonflights. It was like, nope. And that leads me to – I'm so loathe to criticize these guys, Benioff and Weiss, because so many people have been doing it in such an entitled and awful and whiny way. But
– All due respect.
All due respect. The one thing that I think the episode missed was – that sense of sacrifice that John should have sacrificed more to do this. And I think, I'm going to go out on a limb, I think he should have died. They wanted to give John a good ending.
Yeah.
But so many of the things that a lot of people have already criticizing, like why didn't the Unsullied kill him immediately? Why were they so willing to say, okay, he can leave?
Right.
It's because John's the hero. He's been the hero from episode one. We've followed him. We've watched him die. We've rooted for him to come back. He's the underdog.
He's the Harry Potter who grew up in the cupboard under the stairs.
He's the hero. And they didn't want to kill the hero. But I think if they had, then I think people this morning, we're obviously talking on Monday morning, would be happier with it because that would have been a more Game of Thrones-y thing.
I was ready for Dragonfire and or the dragon to just take him out right then and there and be really excited about that and excited about that cut to black where you could have basically had the rest of the episode function almost exactly the same, which is, all right, so the person who said they were the queen and who had taken the city by force, gone. The other person who's the hypothetical heir to the throne, if we believe Bran and Sam, also gone. Okay, well, everybody get together. We're going to have a meeting because we don't really know what to do now.
Yeah, well, and in a lot of ways that would have made more sense because the whole idea of like punishing John for killing her didn't really seem to track either, right?
Yeah, it's the Unsullied.
Don't people kill kings and queens all the time and then get to be king? Like, isn't that what this whole show is about?
Isn't that how you become king or queen?
Kill the person who...
As one of my favorite recappers wrote, it was either Steve Johnson or Glenn Weldon or Alyssa Rosenberg. One of them pointed out that we had just seen the Unsullied executing men who had followed Cersei's orders. And for some reason, the man who – and he must have confessed because how else would they know?
Oh, John. Sweet John.
Yeah. The man who literally just assassinated their queen.
Took the evidence of the murder away.
Yes. I do want to discuss that.
Yes. They just put him in a cell and wait?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, that was hard to believe.
Well, but I guess in the scenario where, I mean, again, the Unsullied aren't just soldiers. They are completely brainwashed soldiers. And so they do exactly as they're told.
Right.
And there's no one to tell them what to do.
Well, there's Grey Worm, and Grey Worm was the person who was literally slitting the throats of the soldiers on his queen's orders. So I would have easily and there was a lot of tension between them the last meeting to begin with. They were just about to go after each other. So the idea that Grey Worm somehow decides that that Jon Snow just killed the woman who saved his life, gave him an identity, freed him and his friends, quote unquote, doesn't immediately go crucify that son of a bitch, is hard to believe.
We didn't have time to see how any of that played out because what we needed to do was have 15 minutes of Tyrion walking the same streets that we saw Arya see at the beginning of the episode instead, like, we, again, you know, there was time. And Monday morning quarterbacking, there was time. Had we wanted to, instead of cutting from the murder to 3 months of beard later on everyone's faces, the passage of time via facial hair.
I actually was staring at Tyrion's beard going, how much longer is that? And at the standard average male rate of growth, he is somewhat hirsute.
We could have seen, like, you know, if Jon had not sort of encountered the Unsullied on his way sort of out the city gates and was, like, surrounding himself with Northmen and, you know, there was some sort of negotiation where Davos tried to convince them to put him in prison. Like, we could have seen all of that. Something happened. All of that happened.
Right. Yeah.
But a show that is, you know, used to showing us interesting sort of, you know, interpersonal politics just skipped over all of that.
Right. Can I tell
you
what?
Well, we had to put a bow on it.
Can I tell you, what? I'm sorry. Can I tell you what I think would have been a better ending? I hate that I'm doing this. If they had asked me,
and
they had the chance, I don't know why they didn't. John kills Danny. You are led to believe that he is about to be killed, crucified, strung up because they're banging at the door, the Unsullied bodyguard, which, why did they leave her alone in there in the first place?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. She had a lot of guards.
And John, the dragon flies up. The dragon sees that Danny is dead. The dragon is upset. John walks over, sits in the throne. The last Targaryen monarch finally takes the Iron Throne. Who's going to sit in the Iron Throne? It's John. John then says to the dragon, Dracarys, and the dragon melts.
Ooh, I like that.
Everybody. John, the throne, then the dragon, which was, by the way, a legit beautiful shot of the dragon picking up the body of his mother and flies off into the darkness. That would have been. And then, as you said, Tricia, everything else could have played out the way it did. The council trying to figure out who should be in charge, even the final shot of the wildlings led by Tormund Giantsbane going back to repopulate the north in an echo of the first scene of the first episode where the children and the families were killed. Would have played.
Might womp womp.
Womp womp.
Yeah. I think John could have, should have, maybe
died.
But we, you know, maybe that's too brutal even for Game of Thrones.
Maybe. I'm thinking about what endings have I loved and what are my two favorites. Breaking Bad, we've talked about, because basically Walter White gives himself up and gives up his life to undo some of the damage he's done. And another great one, which made me legit cry when I read it out loud to my kids, was Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Because Harry Potter decides that in order to end the evil, he has to die. And he accepts it and he walks into the woods and he dies. He comes back because it's a kid's story, but he does it. He thinks he's going to be dead forever and he does it anyway. And that was powerful.
And that last chapter at the train station with his kids.
Oh, it's very sweet.
It's also beautiful.
It's very sweet. But the reason it's sweet is because he did what he had to do at the cost of his own life. And that makes it, that was a very satisfying ending.
Yeah.
And that's maybe what was missing here, that act of sacrifice.
So from that scene, we see Tyrion being much hairier in jail. Grey Worm gets him. And then they go to the summit, which was another sort of fascinating, like, oh, we're going to wrap up a bunch of questions.
Oh, yeah.
People had
Without
to ride in from
spending time.
The corners of the continent. Took
right.
them a few weeks.
And I don't know whether this was fan service or bow tying, but this was wrapping stuff up.
Yeah,
hey,
it
guys,
really
you've
was.
Been with us for almost a decade. Now we're going to wrap everything up. Except for Cyril Farrell, who's still alive.
Totally alive.
I really loved Sansa telling her uncle to sit down.
That
and he
was
tried to recommend himself to
the,
be king.
Not only the single greatest moment of this episode, but one of the greatest of this show. Uncle, sit down. It was so sweet. And Tobias Menzies is like, Tobias, we need you to come back for an episode. Great. What are you going to do? Get a laugh. And he's like, I'm on it. Here I come. The thing where he bonks the
It was down without his
so
sword bonking
good
into
and
the thing.
Awkward and perfect.
That was great.
This is also the scene that apparently a water bottle was on the floor.
Yes.
For those of you who are keeping tabs on that.
You'd think that after the debacle of the great coffee cup of Winterfell, it would have like taken a week and gone through it and looked at every frame to make sure there was nothing to digitally erase, but apparently not.
So this is also where we get to Sam proposing democracy.
We represent all the great houses, but whomever we choose, they won't just rule over lords and ladies. Maybe the decision about what's best for everyone should be left to, well, everyone.
Maybe we should give the dogs a vote as well.
I'll ask my horse.
White men laughing at letting other people make decisions.
Pretty cute.
Can we patriarchy jingle all of them?
Yes, we can. Patriarchy speaking, so ladies be quiet. Peter Sagal is the worst.
There was at least one dusky guy laughing, just say, from Dorne. Who knows? Who were those guys? And when were we going to find out? There were at least two completely unidentified guys.
The closed captions even said, like, man number two,
really?
Man number three.
They don't know either. Nobody told them.
That's hilarious.
I've always been a big fan of Bronze Jan Royce, who's the guy who was sitting next to Robin. I wrote in my notebook, Robin.
There's
it's Robin.
Robin Aaron.
Because that guy's been around for
so long.
Didn't
need to see him again.
He gets
was so glad to see him again.
I'm always glad to see him. He gets like three lines per season.
Somebody said they wanted a spinoff with him, and I was like 0%.
I mean, I don't want a spinoff, but I was like, hey, look, it's Robin.
Hey.
It's Robin. Looking.
Get the band back together.
Somebody said he was kind of Neville Longbottomy, which I mean.
Is that what you mean?
That's what I think they mean.
That is the verb of to Neville Longbottom.
Oh, really?
To get hot.
To mature from a very awkward child into a handsome.
Into like a very nice looking person.
Can women Neville Longbottom?
I think so. I mean, there might be, a different analogy you would use.
It's maybe to Princess Diaries someone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Probably Anne Hathaway. Yeah. Usually just involves contact lenses.
Apparently. Yeah, and tweezing eyebrows.
Yeah.
It would have been a shame like someone just takes off Robin Aaron's glasses and says, why?
Oh, my
why
God.
You're handsome.
You're beautiful.
It's Steve Urkel and Stefan Urkel.
We're getting lost here. So we're still at the council.
With and
people we know and love and some extras.
Older white men deciding that democracy is not a good idea. And so then they decide to nominate somebody who has done very little to help overall.
And the
person who did the least work on the class project gets the prize.
And he leads into that as it starts that speech about stories.
What's
more powerful than stories?
Yep.
Who is the best? Do we have that?
Yep, we sure do.
What unites people? Armies? Gold? Flags? Stories. There's nothing in the world more powerful than a good story. Nothing can stop it. No enemy can defeat it. And who has a better story than Bran the Broken? The boy who fell from a high tower and lived. He is our memory. The keeper of all our stories. Who better to lead us into the future?
What did y'all think about? I mean, my main thing was like, they kept referring to him as Bran the Broken, but he has been so careful over this season, especially to clarify that he is no longer Bran because he is a three-eyed raven.
Right.
So this felt
Not even a person.
I don't know.
Like
I wasn't
Prince
sold
deciding
on it.
To go by the symbol and then being like, "Nah, you can call me Prince again."
It's exactly like that.
Yeah.
Well, especially if it's like you can call me Prince again to get this really cool thing that I've been pretending like I didn't want, but now that
why did I come here all this way?
Yeah. I don't know. I just
he launched into that monologue about the power of stories, and I'm like, "What? What bullshit? What commentary? What stupid philosophizing?
I am going
to go into my podcast recording session talking about this TV show that I'm totally obsessed with to thousands of other people who are totally obsessed
stories.
With it, and say, ha, this bullshit about stories
who
is just that.
Who gives a fuck about stories?
Exactly.
Am I right?
What TV show you want to talk about next?
It reminded me a lot of Samwell talking about, I guess it was Bran talking about the Night King and why the Night King wanted, the Night King's goals were.
Because our history and our memory is what makes
us human. It's all about stories. Yeah.
Did you see that? I always ask you guys this question because I sure didn't. Did you see that coming when the camera, I think there was actually a pan down the characters. Who's it going to be? Right? And then it stops on Bran just as he says, Bran the Builder. Did you guys see that coming?
My guess was that it would be him because he's sitting in the middle.
Yeah.
Sitting directly in the
good
middle.
Good one.
And also that everyone else would potentially have like a self-interested approach
about
to the
Bran.
Question.
He doesn't
and
give
so
a fuck.
it's a little bit like, well, if it can't be me,
yes.
Who do I want it to be? Like if you're not allowed to put your own name in the hat,
yes.
Whose name do you put? The person who's the least threatening to you.
Right.
Which for most of those people is probably Bran.
It was a little less convincing than when Samwell convinced everybody to vote for Jon as commander of the Night's Watch.
I just rewatched that episode like a few days ago, and that was a very nice little speech you made.
It was.
I think it worked. And also I had a little bit of the same reaction of, oh boy, this is the moment where you become very self-aware of the fact that stories are written by writers and writers think stories are important.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. It was like, okay, I get why y'all are saying this.
Yes.
But
and
also,
that's fine. Like, you can give yourselves a pat on the back. I love stories.
But also, I love stories. And I think they're right. I think that, it's a common refrain in great stories because, again, great stories are written by great storytellers who want those things to be what matters. And the idea of, like, the pen being mightier than the sword is kind of a nice idea because it means actually that any of us could create change or have an influence on the world around us if we, you know, are a part of the right story. But it also, yeah, the whole three-eyed raven business.
Yeah.
I couldn't get around from the internal logic at that moment.
That he was outside almost, of humanity.
He had worked so hard to disconnect himself from all of his allegiances, which I guess, to your point, could make him a better ruler than a lot of those people.
Right.
But I just, it made, like, I thought that he would be sort of like the ever-knowing person behind the king helping out,
right,
is kind of what I, or king or queen, you know, that, but I just found that to be,
although Tyrion's point
surprising,
that he's without question the most knowledgeable person in Westeros, and he also, by virtue of the fact that he has A, no ambition, and B, can have no children, makes him a very safe choice.
I'm not mad about
it.
Temporary solution.
There's a certain logic to this.
I guess I just didn't expect
We also skipped over an incredible leap of logic where they're like, well, what are we going to do about John? How are we going to decide? Well, we need to pick a king to decide. And Grey Worm says, okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what Grey Worm's going
to
do.
Yeah, Grey Worm is like, I'll just listen to whoever you guys decide.
Okay, cool.
That's cool.
No problem.
No.
All right. So let's talk about that and much more in just a minute. We are back to discuss this episode. But first, I just want to remind everybody, this is actually the last week that y'all can get some awesome Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal tote bags. Help support public media.
These will be very valuable someday.
Right? Somebody actually sent us an email yesterday saying, I can't wait to receive my tote to carry all of my hurt feelings for John.
There you are.
Yeah, this tote bag can fit feelings. Yep. It can fit wayward coffee cups and water bottles that have no business on
good
sets.
One.
It can fit books if George ever writes them.
So many things you could put in these tote bags, and you're helping support awesome stuff made here at WBEZ, like Nerdette Recaps. If you want to find out more about that, you can go to our Instagram and actually see pictures of the tote bag. Just look for Nerdette Podcast. Okay, so let's listen to Tyrion and Jon now that Jon is in jail.
The Unsullied wanted your head, of course. But Grey Worm has accepted the justice of a life sentence. Sansa and Arya wanted you freed. But they understand our new king needs to make peace. No one is very happy. Which means it's a good compromise, I suppose.
Was it right? What I did?
What we did?
It doesn't feel right.
Ask me again in 10 years.
I appreciated the fact that John feels bad. I appreciated the fact that there's no triumph. I appreciated the fact that the John's question, did I do the right thing, was answered perhaps in the best way. Ask me in 10 years. Because right now it seems like we're in a better place than we would be if Dany was in charge and starting her next war of conquest.
Well,
you never know.
And I'm glad they didn't lean in too hard then to him saying he loved her and mourning that. You know, like he was more upset, it seemed, about sort of the moral quandary of what he did and wrestling with that, which to me was much more believable than she was the love of my life. What have I done?
Yeah, we wouldn't have bought
that. We would have had such beautiful babies.
I will say they would have been attractive, if short.
I liked, too, that Tyrion tried to shoulder some of the blame there, what we did.
Yeah.
Not what John did.
Yeah.
Because he's like, no, I
talked you into it.
Yeah, I talked you into it. I am as much the one who sort of stabbed her as you are.
Speaking of stabbing her, a lot of people I saw were complaining about the way that was shot, that you didn't get to see him stab her. But I'm like, it's okay. And first of all, I appreciated the fact that it was close on their faces during the entire sequence. I think it was one shot until he lays her on the ground. I'd have to go back and look at it again, which I think if you're going to do that shot, it's better than backing up and seeing, you know, the stab. You just look at her face as she, well, dies.
So I have a question for y'all.
Yes.
How much do you think Jon being a Targaryen mattered in the end?
Oh, I think the dragon would have definitely killed him at several points had he not been.
That's probably true. Certainly that explains why the dragon – it's the only explanation you can think of why the dragon didn't get angry and flame him, either when he was walking in or after he had done the deed. Although it was weird because he considering the parentage of Jon Snow was such a deep secret laid in there by George R. Martin so long ago and so important to the plot that he never actually gets to. And that's why I think sitting on the throne and then asking the dragon to flame him would have at least been an active recognition of that.
Yes, I feel like it would have closed that loop a little better.
It just becomes irrelevant. I mean, nobody ever says, well, we're going to – nobody even says we have to exile you because you're a Targaryen and we can't have you around. Nobody even like
brings
that up.
Right, or you're the rightful heir or anything. It's just that you killed the queen, so you got
it. The only time it becomes relevant in this episode was when Arya makes the point accurately that you will always be a threat to her because you're of a more rightful claim.
Yeah, Tyrion says it too. He's like, you think I'm the last one she'll execute?
Right.
Who else is a threat to her?
Right.
But
as we said, that seems weird as a motivation. Because he didn't say bucko. He would have. It would have been good. Peter Dinklage could have pulled that off. He would have introduced the term to Westeros. Like I said, that was a strange note that it seemed like all they were saying was, she's going to kill you, man. You better do something first. Even though, as you said, Tricia, earlier, that there was the implication that without him around, she would be even crazier. So,
I also thought it was interesting that they, in that scene with Tyrion and Jon, in a similar sense, are quoting Maester Aemon, who gave up power.
Right. Who was a Targaryen.
Who was a Targaryen,
yes,
who gave up
grandpa,
power.
Right? Or uncle-ish thing?
Related.
Person? Related.
Oh, gosh.
Somebody figure that out. If I had like 10 more seconds, I could do it in my head.
Yeah,
I could do the family tree. But
I respect your...
Somebody type up a detailed email explaining to us the relationship.
No, please don't. It's
okay. And then delete it
We're
and
good.
Go outside.
We're good. Yeah, go
Enjoy
outside.
The sun.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
the
don't
spring.
Send it. We're good on those.
We can look it up ourselves. It's just, you know...
In the moment. So what did you think of? I think people were the most upset about John going to the Night's Watch, from what I could tell. My brother was very upset. He sent me a number of texts.
Why was
this
he
morning.
Upset?
Well, partly because, like, what's the point of the Night's Watch at
As
this
John
juncture?
Says, is there still a Night's Watch?
Right.
Which there isn't.
Know?
Which,
well, right.
There's nothing to watch against. The Night King is dead. The Wildings are real cool now.
It's also Tyrion's greatest sort of... like sort of trick on everyone is like he's like, oh, he needs to go do this thing that he like
that he
doesn't
knows
still
doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe that is
what he
so
says.
He's basically freeing him to the north to go hang out with his dog and his best friend.
And the thing is, I mean, he even said 2 episodes ago when he said goodbye to Tormund, I wish I could go with y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I mean, he didn't look super happy in the moment.
Yeah, there was definitely lingering shots as we're moving now to the very final scene of the very final episode of this whole series of him marching north with a surprising number of children. Where did the children come from? Mm. But clearly it was meant to indicate, again, that one of the very first images of this TV show was a murdered wildling child. The idea is that we're repopulating, we are returning. There's that shot of that literal green shoot coming out
Winter
of the snow.
Winter is over.
Winter
spring
is over.
Coming.
But yeah, even though they seem to be marching forward a continuing life and a life of life, I guess, John seems ambivalent about it. He doesn't smile. He looks back. He looks around him. I mean, I think
I guess it would have been weird if he had just started beaming.
Yeah. I mean, there is a sense that he's leaving the world and going into exile and will never return as his sacrifice, which, again, I don't think was sufficient. But I think they meant it that way.
Yeah. So, Sansa?
You gotta be happy about Sansa. And one of the things I've been thinking about is supposedly George R. R. Martin had these endings for these characters in mind. We've all been told that he always knew where they were going to end up, meaning that he knew Dany was going to end up being a mad Targaryen or at least a mass murderer, if perfectly sane. and that Bran would end up being king, which makes more sense when you think about, somebody pointed this out on Twitter, that the very first point of view chapter in the first book
is Bran.
Is a prologue, which
it's
is the
Bran
scene
watching
the
Robert Baratheon uprise at
exactly.
Winterfell.
Exactly. So you start with Bran, and that chapter ends with him being thrown off the tower. And then to think that that's the guy who's going to grow up and be king is an interesting thing. To think that this young girl, Dany, who we meet when she's innocent and abused and scared, grows up to be the great terror of the Western world is interesting.
Yeah.
And to think, finally, of Sansa, that shallow, ignorant, many ways foolish girl, grows up to be, as many people have pointed out, the only person who knows what she's doing in a leadership position is A... humiliating to me because I used to make fun of her for being an idiot and I was totally wrong.
Everyone always underestimates teenage girls, but we grow up and then we
Our badass.
I would, if I could call the patriarchy jingle on every stupid thing I said about Sansa, like in prior seasons,
I don't
would.
Think it's too late. Let's do it.
All right.
How many minutes has it been since Peter's mentioned Harvard? What a colossal tool.
Thank you. I deserve that. First, all the doubt I ever said about Sansa. So if you think about like those three characters at least, and you think about that's where they were going all along, whether or not, at least in my mind, you can argue with the timing of the beats, I think it's all pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
That Bran ends up being king, that Sansa ends up being queen of the North, that Dany ends up being who she ended up. And I guess maybe Jon, I'm not sure. I'm not nearly as sure about his ending as I am about the other
three.
I feel
pretty good about Jon.
I think that also the baller move of waiting for everybody else to say Bran should be king and being like, sure, 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 yeah, you get to be king, but not of me.
Yes.
It's totally an older sister move.
That is a good one.
You're
that
not the king of me.
Yeah.
We haven't even mentioned Arya. So.
Yeah. She's a pirate.
She's a pirate. She's or as my friend Bess Kalb said, she's Arya the Explorer.
Oh, boy.
The woman is good.
There is some concern about her becoming a colonizer. On the internet.
Well, we don't know where she's going.
She doesn't have like an armada of conquering.
I'm just saying. I'm just putting that viewpoint out there.
She's heading. I mean, I was thinking about that, particularly in the conversation that we three have had about the fact that she's basically a psychopath. And whether or not that's literally true anymore, she certainly isn't fit for the company, for polite company.
Well, I mean, the thing that I really loved about Arya's storyline is that I really wanted her to shift from being an assassin after that conversation with the Hound. Otherwise, I thought that
yes,
that conversation didn't
that.
Matter.
That may be her
yes.
return
and
to
and especially
life.
Her walking through all of that horrible carnage afterwards and seeing the burned bodies. To me, I thought it would be really interesting for that to result in some very serious character shifting from her no longer being interested in just murdering a bunch of people.
Yes, and that seems to have
and
happened.
And it seems to have happened. Yeah, she gave up the list. She's ready to go check
she
out
she feels
some
like
cool
her family
stuff.
Is safe.
Yeah.
Yes. And so
yeah.
And
that's kind of lovely.
And yet she removes herself. I mean, because – I mean, I think about that moment where she runs into her – was it Nymeria? Who was her direwolf? I can't
yeah.
remember who's who. And she's like, come back with me to Winterfell. And the direwolf's like, no. And she says, that's not you. And I feel like this decision is like, I ain't going back with any of you. That's not me. And I mean, the decision to leave the known world – is rather extreme. I mean, she could have said, I'm going to go hang out in Essos. I got some friends I want to hang out with or whatever. Or there's whole parts of the world I haven't seen yet, like I've never been to Pentos or whatever. But no, she leaves the known world, which is a somewhat self-aware thing to say.
Well, I also kind of liked it because what I really wanted Arya to do was become a Buddhist. And I feel like this is kind of close.
In a weird way, she's left the earthly things behind.
Exactly.
Almost by literally leaving the earth.
But I feel like the very intentional shot of the Stark sigil
boat.
On the
yeah.
sail
yeah.
is the idea that she's not leaving as no one. She's leaving
as
Arya.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
yeah,
right.
That's a good point.
What did you guys think about the commonplace complaint that we never saw her? Gosh, I don't even remember the last time. It must have been when she killed Walder Frey. That she hasn't put on somebody else's face.
Well,
she never used that superpower
yeah.
she acquired.
I mean, I think, Tricia, you said it a while back now that the showrunners are just not super comfortable in the magic stuff.
Or they just seem to avoid it
or,
as
you know,
opposed to
yeah.
leaning to
I mean,
it.
I just think like the –
except for dragons.
Because Bran could have warped into something.
And Bran.
Arya could have used her face stuff. Like there are a lot of – you know, Jon – like something could have happened with the fact that Jon came back from the dead. Like there were a lot of things that were potentially super magical and mysterious that just never came to fruition.
It
I think,
seemed,
you know,
to me
that didn't bug me.
It seems to me that they wanted to put all that aside. And sort of take that all away from the characters, their magical abilities, their fireproofing, whatever else, and just have them work it out as human beings, which
well,
in general I think is smart.
I mean, they used the magic whenever they needed it, like to share information.
Magic ex machina.
Yeah. what I know, but I mean to say in this final episode
that
they didn't want anybody to use magic to solve a problem in the end.
Right.
And I think that's fairly smart.
Well, and I hate to say it, Peter, but the thing you said several weeks ago about how the real Game of Thrones is the friends we made along the way.
I know. It's kind of true.
It's kind of nice.
It is. We're all here.
I can't believe that I'm about to say these words aloud. I agree with Peter.
Huzzah!
There
Thus,
it is.
The Game of Thrones has ended.
Oh, sure. Call the end of the game at the moment when you pull ahead.
Oh.
I'm no fool. It's over. It's done. Taking my bog, taking my notebook, and going home.
He does have so many notebooks, you guys.
I do. I have a lot of notebooks.
You do have a little pile over there.
I know. And someday I'm going to look back on this notebook that I've kept for this last season and go, what the hell was I doing with my time in 2019? Wow, I feel like, I mean, I don't want this to end.
I know,
I actually
right?
don't want this episode of our podcast to end because that means we can't do it anymore.
Well,
although we do have one more coming up.
We will have one more episode and it will come out next Tuesday afternoon. We're taking Monday off because Memorial Day, but we'll be here for you on Tuesday.
Yep, we will.
If you want to weigh in on this conversation in the meantime, you can use the hashtag NerdAtRecaps. We have a pretty sweet newsletter. You can sign up for it on our Facebook page. Just click the blue sign up link. Many thanks to another Greta named Regretta13 who left us a nice review on Apple Podcasts that said, this is my all-time favorite podcast.
Ooh.
Greta also bought the tote bag. Thank you, Greta.
Thank you, Greta.
I love great Gretas. The show is produced by us with help from Justin Bull. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. And our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music. Is anybody
None of us
leave?
Want to
we
leave the room.
It.
All right.
No,
we're
going
to leave the room. I have to go do my other job.
No, you hang up. No, you hang up.
Speaking of teenage girls, that's exactly who we
oh,
all are. This is terrible.
Goodness.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank
you always
Peter.
Accuse me of
it's
wanting to
fun.
Get the last word, but I'm going to say this, and then you can insult me so you can have the last word.
Are you sure this isn't just you getting the last
this
word?
This is not the last word. I'm warning you.
It's not even the last episode.
I'm going to say this, and it's not even the last episode. I'm going to say this, and then you can say whatever you want to me,
okay.
And you can have the last word. This has been so much fun. I have enjoyed this so tremendously much. I am so thrilled that you guys agreed to do this some years ago, because it is an absolute fucking joy to do this with you.
It has been super fun.
You're the best, Peter. You're not the worst.
Stannis is
the worst. Weird. This is weird. Okay, let's go.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.